Welcome to another episode of PMCA Research Chat. On this episode in the Cannabis and Confections and Snacks series, we'll be discussing the future of cannabis. So many possibilities. With me today is Millie Montana, Guilty Pleasures by Millie. Millie Montana's passion for cannabis was the driving force that got her an early foot in the industry. Working in all areas from cultivation to retail, she's had her hands in cannabis for over 10 years. While attending Barry University in Miami, she quickly realized that cannabis was a fast-growing industry and the time to get in was now. After living around the country from East to West Coast, Millie took what she had learned navigating each state's constantly changing cannabis laws and returned to her home state, Michigan, to run her own business in Detroit. Guilty Pleasures by Millie was founded in 2015. What began as a one-woman show quickly became a growing company, which now serves provisioning centers all across Michigan. She currently has a lineup of 42 quality products across three brands, Guilty Pleasures by Millie, Cannatropics, and Madeira, that cater to both the THC and CBD markets. The product lineup consists of edibles, concentrates, flower, skincare, and cosmetics. Millie is now the founder and CEO of Millie Montana Industries, the largest female-owned license holder in Michigan, primarily focused on outdoor cultivation and processing. She's projecting to grow 80,000 medical and recreational plants, yielding approximately 500,000 pounds of biomass for the 2022 outdoor season. Millie prides herself in her grassroots history with experience built in the trenches of this fast-growing and changing industry. On today's episode, we'll be talking about how we define the future of cannabis and confections. The clear and defined future is federal legalization, but everything between now and then is unknown and extremely unpredictable. Where does that leave us? How do we prepare? What do we need to know? While the path is unclear, there are still many things to consider. Unfortunately, we will all be susceptible to supply chain issues that can compromise our businesses. Today, we will dive into the roadmap to the future from an infused cannabis business perspective to uncover possible strategies that will be helpful on the road to national expansion and possibly importing and exporting. Welcome and thank you, Millie, for joining us today. Have I missed anything or is there anything you'd like to add before we dive in?
No, I think you nailed it. And thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here today.
So just to clarify, bulk flower equals roll your own?
Yeah, so bulk flower, when you go to a provisioning center and they do like a deli style type of sell, like a sell to you, that's basically bulk flower. Yep. So the stores can roll it. Yeah, they could do whatever they want with it. But yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
And did you hit the biomass target for 22?
We did not. There were still a lot of hurdles, you know, with growing an outdoor in Michigan too. We don't have the best weather for it. So if we don't nail it in the one season that we do have, it's not going to be, you know, anything that we thought it was going to be.
So this is all grown indoors?
No. So we actually do all outdoor right now. And the reason for that is because outdoor is really great for infused products because, you know, you're basically mass producing at that point. So, you know, your oil needs will be serviced through that. You can process and make extraction. You can turn it into pre-roll. So there's like a lot more options with an outdoor versus an indoor, especially when you're looking at overhead.
Okay. In your bio, there are several references to growing and cultivation. This probably implies you spend a significant amount of time working with botanists and agronomics. Is that a fair assumption?
You know, believe it or not, a lot of the people that I work with have all been in the industry for a long time and know their role really well when it comes to growing cannabis. You know, we've worked with fellow botanists as well, just to, you know, there's certain things that you want to nail down in your process, right? In your formula. You know, we're looking into tissue culture. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Yep. Tissue culture is, I think, what we're going to end up doing this coming season and how we're going to be able to get our plants. So just having that support from people with that type of background definitely helps us get, you know, to that next level.
Yeah. I find it really interesting from that perspective, because with an R&D background that I have, I'm looking at it as you're probably looking at standardizing product, standardizing levels of THC or CBD, the whole nine yards with regard to strains and how you cultivate them per the season.
Absolutely. I mean, with the strains, it can get so specific, especially when you're, if you have a strain that's crossbred, the original form of that strain is not going to require the same nutrients as the now, you know, new strain that you have that's mixed with something else. So these are all things that you learn with trial and error. And, you know, when you're looking at indoor versus outdoor, there's a lot of different strains that are really great for growing inside, but are not going to do great outside. And then it's the vice versa. So there's definitely a lot of R&D that goes into it.
So do you have any issues with soil contamination or anything like that? If you're growing, I would imagine if you're doing indoor cultivation, you can pretty much manage that. But in the chocolate industry, we've seen some issues with, I don't know, cadmium, lead, that kind of thing. Do you guys have any inherent issues with your product from a plant perspective, a growing perspective?
No, we got really lucky. So our farm used to be a dairy farm and they were not operating for a few years. So technically there was nothing growing. There was no cows on the property. The soil is basically organic, I guess, at this point. Nothing's been on there for about 4 years.
Wow.
So we were able to take soil. We purchased the soil that we needed. We mended it into our soil and treated that. And we haven't had any issues at all. Actually, we've passed all testing. I think we're very happy with that because, you know, in outdoor, you can also do outdoor, those smart pots, those cloth pots. So you can still control the soil that way, but we were brave. We went right into the ground and I'm glad that we did because it was a lot better than we thought it was going to be.
So are there any other areas that regionally that have issues with, like I said, getting back to my chocolate perspective, depending on an origin area, we can have different inflections or contaminants based on that. So as you said, your area is pretty good. You don't have any issues. Are there other areas that have to watch that kind of thing as you've traveled the country in your experience? Is that a thing that people are watching out for? Or is this pretty much?
Absolutely. So, you know, one thing even before that to note is every single state has different testing requirements, right? So when you look at a place like Michigan, we have the strictest testing guidelines in the country. Basically, if anything shows up, and this is on the medical side, if anything shows up, even just a slight bit, that you can fail. So now, considering now we're in Michigan, anywhere you go, you'll have these issues unless, you know, for example, your farm is organic, you don't necessarily put plants in the ground, you know, so it just depends on the style. And I think that's really specific to whatever piece of land that you're working with. And it just depends because you could do outdoor. And again, you can do pots over the ground and still be able to put your plumbing through. You know what I mean? It just depends. But yeah, definitely it's a problem.
So since we touched on that, what are the state, local, or federal government's involvement at any level of this? Because we know for a fact that on a federal level, it's almost as if they don't want to get involved. They don't want to have full legalization. So they're leaving it up to the states, which just confuses everybody as far as what we can get away with, what we can do, what we can sell. I've been getting everybody's thoughts on this.
Yep.
What's your perspective on this?
So my perspective is a little different because for me, I'm a small guy, right? Compared to everybody else. So in my eyes, if it goes federally legal, you know, what's stopping all the big guys from coming in and wiping out people like me, right? So the longer that it stays federally unregulated, you know, we'll use that word instead of illegal because I don't like the word illegal. You know, it's not regulated. So, you know, it gives me time as a business to grow and be able to withstand the competition that's coming. You know, the good thing is there's protection on that side. The bad thing is now looking to expand state to state, you basically have to reset up shop everywhere you go. And you might not have the same scenario everywhere. You can get a license in one state and then the other state, let's say they've reached their cap on licenses. So you might have to partner with somebody that already has a license. Oh. So there's, you know, there's a few different business models, you know, when you're talking about MSO or like multi-state operators, kind of like ways around it. But obviously there's no crossing state lines. So for example, if I'm in Michigan and I have a really beautiful big setup here and I can, you know, make 200,000 units a day, but I can only sell 200,000 units a month, you know, I can't take that extra product and then take it out to my other location in Ohio because that's illegal. So those are the kind of hurdles that you have to think about that are going to come your way. because you don't want to overproduce, but you also don't want to underproduce.
If there were federal legalization, can you explain the difference between, you're licensed in Michigan, but would you, is distribution out of the question? I mean, could somebody sell your brand somewhere else in a distribution network as, or you can't even do that until it's federal?
So it would have to be made in the state that it's selling in, pretty much.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. So that, and that's what I've seen, like when speaking to the confectionery industry, you know, we're all about, we want bigger equipment so we can make more a day, make more per hour. You know, we're lower on our labor numbers, but that type of investment is scary.
Not only that, I'm thinking in terms of, you've got a sweet spot. You can't make too much, but you got to hit your numbers. And if you're working a co-man, how much do you invest that manages profit with what you can legally make?
Well, I'm about to burst everybody's bubble right now because everyone thinks that we make so much money in cannabis. And I'm going to tell you right now that we don't. And this is all a long-term play. Profits are minuscule. And again, using Michigan as an example, so there was the gray market where we had a caregiver program. There was provisioning centers everywhere, but we didn't have necessarily like separated licenses and licensing fees and all this stuff. So once that came into play, now from gray market, 100 milligrams, we're selling 750 wholesale. Okay. Now we get into the, we call it like the legal market because of the new licensing, right? So now because of everyone coming in and getting licensing and there's so much product, now that 750, you're talking 550. Now, fast forward a year later, there's 500 new edible companies out here. Now we're down bottoming out. People are selling, you know, edibles for $2, $1.50. The same 100 milligrams that they used to sell for $7.50 is now $1.50. So now your licensing costs don't change. Your labor doesn't change. Your cost of packaging doesn't change. Your taxes don't change. And that's another thing that we have to deal with is a 280E tax code where we have to pretty much pay 50% of profit. We don't get any write-offs. And it's actually worse for stores, at least in cultivation and in processing, you can write off anything that directly goes into your goods. But for example, sales and marketing, you can't write that off. So there's a lot of things and, you know, people should definitely take this into consideration. This is a long-term play. This is a, I've been in this for 5 years. I'm doing this much revenue and I have this much in, you know, payables and receivables. And this is what my value of my company is. Either you sell, you merge, or you're just, you stay, you know what I mean? So it's just scary. You know, when we don't have anything to model this off of and nobody's done this before us. So
I was going to dig into that a little further because when I look at your Michigan stats, pretty much from where we're sitting, anything edibles, probably somewhere around 12% of applications or sales. Yep. So once again, it's not like you're moving a lot of product to generate a lot of revenue. Is that reflective of the country as well? Or is that just indicative of Michigan?
So from my experience and what I've seen in other states and their numbers, it's almost the same, right? So it's a good thing to know this because it's more than likely it's going to be like this in every state. It's going to go flower, extracts, and edibles, right? But like some of the top edible players I know in Michigan are doing anywhere from, you know, 200 to 500,000 units a month, right? We do have one of the largest markets per capita in the whole United States, pretty much next to California. But now if you go to like Massachusetts, it's not the same thing. So having a vertical integration of some sort is important, whether you're vertically integrating on different products or you, let's say you cultivate and then you process your own oil or you have your own extraction. You know what I mean? There's so many different ways to structure it. It just really depends, I think, on where you're at and what kind of licensing they have, you know, and then you can kind of determine from there what to do.
When you say the product has to be made in the particular state, does that mean every component or from the cannabis to the co-manufacturer and out the door to the store? Or can you distribute what you grow somewhere to a co-manufacturer to the state?
Great question. So anything that's cannabis, right? So for example, I'll give you an example. Albanese is a huge gummy company. I'm sure you guys know.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of gummy producers purchase Albanese in bulk, and they'll melt them down and infuse it. So like, if you're making your gummies in another state, it doesn't matter. As long as it's not infused, the actual infusion part has to happen in your state. It has to get packaged in your facility. Depending on what state you're in, you know, distribution or transportation. So for example, in Michigan, we don't have distribution. We have armored transport. So if we do our own sales and we schedule our armored transport, they come in, they pick up our orders, they deliver our order within 48 hours, and they have to return the funds 48 hours after that. And that's what we deal with here. So it just depends on where you're at.
To your previous point, that kind of security isn't cheap either.
Oh, no. I mean, we're paying for a local, or let's say up to 3 hours, it's about $150 per order. So the way that they will charge you is based on their truck. So right now, if like I'm a transport company and I'm like, I'm going to send this truck out to Grand Rapids. So I'm going to pick out this order, and this order. And then because now I have all these orders, I'm dividing out what it would cost me to go all the way to Grand Rapids between all these orders, which typically comes out to about $150. Now, if you're going north or to the UP, you're talking $450 to $650 for a delivery, because we could take 12 hours to drive to the UP. So that final cost can be upwards of 50 cents per unit additionally. So, you know, and then there's testing fees as well. Testing fees can also come up to about 50 cents. So you're just a dollar in on required testing and transport mm-hmm. that you have to do. You're already a dollar into your product.
Are you finding the consumers have a breakoff point, or are they willing to pay for a quality product / brand if they know the product is good? I guess what I'm saying is, how much are they willing to pay? If you're going to backstop it with your testing and everything, your transport and everything else, from my perspective, I would be willing to pay whatever it costs. Because first of all, it's an indulgence. Second of all, it's taking the edge off whatever my angle is. And Right. The money at that point is immaterial.
So again, it really, really depends on where you're at. So like, I'll break down Michigan because I know the Michigan market really well. I know in, let's say, Traverse City, right? Traverse City is so busy during the summer. I know it's full of tourists. I know, you know, people are there to spend money. So I can probably get away with a lot more in Traverse City versus, you know, Flint or Detroit, for example. So, but the problem is I cannot price my product for Detroit and then price my product for Traverse City. The only people that really do that is the retail stores. Okay. So you're going to have to deal with that cutthroat market. Let's say you go into a store and you're like, hey, here's my gummy. This is my gummy. It's 100 milligrams. I want $2.50 for it. I don't want this. This guy is giving it to me for $2.
Oh my God.
Right? And they'll haggle you. So, and this is everywhere that you go. I've had to deal with this everywhere I've gone. So again, you want to be able to place yourself in a position where you're almost influencing the market, right? And mm-hmm. you're able to flood the market because there's so much. There are over 100 gummy brands right now in Michigan alone. There's so much competition. A lot of money is going to be spent on marketing to get those customers because, again, like the majority of the Michigan market it's price driven. And that's just the reality of it. We want to have a quality product at a quality price. But if you go to the grocery store and you buy candy at the store, what is the true profit of a Snickers bar or a Hershey's bar? It's cents. You know what I mean? So I think that's where we're heading towards, but with the consideration of the cannabis costs. But again, cannabis costs are also going down, where we were paying, you know, anywhere from $12,000 to $22,000 a liter of oil. Right. Which if you look at it, a liter is about 10,000 grams. Right. Mm-hmm. Now the liter is going to be 80% THC. So if it was perfectly dosed and there was no waste, I should get 8,000 units out of that. Right. And so for the same 8,000 units, it went from, let's say, 22 at a high, 12 at a medium, you know, and now today it's $1,100.
Wow.
Yeah. For me, as again, a small business, when I initially got into the market, you know, I put everything I had into this. I spent so much money on oil, right? And then months later, they cut costs of oil in the industry. So my price didn't change. I still have to drop my price to compete with everybody else though. So even though I paid $12,000 for my liter, this guy paid $5,000 for his, I still have to match his price or I'm going to lose my shelf space.
So you're losing money. And if you
you're right. But you have to have backup. And when I say backup, I mean other products other than edibles.
While we're going down that path, I'm just trying to wrap this particular. So would it behoove you from an edibles perspective to pair with some sort of a bean to bar local organization and tell a tale to squeak a little more per pound out? I don't know. Because everybody loves a story. And you can spin it any way you want. But I'm curious if that plays any part to the people that are buying this or if they're just buying it.
Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. I'll tell you, if you ever spend a day at a provisioning center, you just don't know who's going to walk in. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what we're all learning. All of us collectively in this industry are still learning what our market is, because now the grandma and grandpa that thought cannabis was horrible are now coming into a provisioning center to purchase a product. Grandma and grandpa are going to get 5 milligram doses versus stoner Bob and Sally are going to get 20 milligram doses, right? Like, it just depends. We're still learning. I think we got to figure out a way to meet in the middle before we can start saying, you know, this market's like this and this market's like this. We don't know who's smoking weed. Like, let's be real. We don't know who's eating it. We don't know who's cooking it at their house. Like, we don't know what people are doing with it fully. Mm-hmm. What we do know is flower sells the most, extracts sell the second most, and edibles sell the third most. You know, out of edibles, gummies are number one. You know, chocolates are number two. Those are the things that we know. So it just depends. And now if you go to California, it's way different. Their market, there's that, you could get away with that in California.
So to wrap up the legislation part, mm-hmm. do you see any resolution at the federal level at this point, or is it still?
No.
Okay.
I'll say that because of the current administration, and with all due respect, obviously all respect to them, but they were never so. You got to think about who's going to pass these laws, right? Like Joe Biden passed the, I forget what year it was, but it was a drug law. So the problem is we don't want this in the wrong hands, right? We don't want another industry, and I'm not going to say who it is, to come in and like ruin this for us, right? Because we appreciate this full plant. It's a full plant experience, okay? There's so many different parts to it. We don't want to take a pill. We don't want, you know what I mean? It's like, it takes the whole experience out of it. So I think that if we can somewhat figure out a way to not penalize people for having cannabis, like why are people still in jail when there's people making millions of dollars off of this?
Yep.
You know, I think, you know, let's start there. Let's start like correcting our wrongs. And I think being open to it is the best way to go. But as far as what I see right now, I mean, even, you know, Kamala Harris was fully against this. And I feel like while I want to support as much research as possible, you know, I don't want biased research either. You know what I mean?
And that's a question I ask everybody. Is there any research out there? I don't know if from that angle or not, but is there any credible non-biased research going on for the benefits of cannabis right now?
Yes, there are actually a lot of studies that come out of, and I'm so sorry that I don't know the name of this university, but it's in Israel. And a lot of their research is very positive. And again, like with everything, there's negatives, right? But I'll tell you with my research, like personally witnessing this over the years, it's a great thing and we're going in the right direction. And I encourage everyone to, you know, just read into it and, you know, just be careful what you read, obviously online and
but
know,
educate yourself.
Yeah, but definitely I would check out the studies from Israel. I'll have to find the name of the university.
I think Brian mentioned that when we talked to him as well. So let's talk about you. Let's put all that behind. can you break down any product or marketing differences between your three brands?
Yep. So Guilty Pleasures was my original brand, and I kind of created it as an independent woman, very feminine, strong energy type of branding and marketing. And that worked well for us because we were all female owned operated. And then, you know, Canotropics is kind of like a tropical and clean white and very light pastel colors type of thing. And that's more, again, more tropical flavors, separate from your typical cherry, blue raspberry, you know, pineapple.
Singular.
Yeah. Those are like blends of different flavors that we had. So that's what made that those two different from each other. We had hard candy, we offered chocolates, we offered fortune cookies, and they were all the flavors were just basically either tropical or went under guilty pleasures. So, and then Mudira is a CBD company, and we did go with the female empowerment marketing for that one as well. Mudira actually means woman in charge in Arabic, and I'm Middle Eastern, so that was a little bit more personal for me. But the colorways and things like that are very, you know, strong and black and white. And I've noticed all three of them work just based on where you're located, right? Now, in the summertime, Canna Tropicz is great because Canna Tropicz, it's summertime, right? Everyone wants tropical this and tropical that. And then in the wintertime, it works good, but not as well as Guilty Pleasures. So I found, you know, that about my brands too. It can be seasonal as well.
Can you give us an overview on working with cannabis and confections, particularly confections?
Yep. So cannabis is very, very hard to work with. It's an oil-based, you know, substance, right? So think about hard candy, sugar, water, corn syrup. How do you bind
it? I can't do it, Millie, because I work in chocolate. It's so easy.
Yeah, chocolate is the best. Chocolate is the easiest thing. But unfortunately, it's not the best seller. So we got to figure out another way. But yeah, I think before you dive in, like knowing how THC works, mistakes are expensive. Dosing, if it's wrong and you test and you fail your testing, you'll have the biggest issues of either it fails and you can't sell it, you have to relabel your packaging, you know, because you get like a 10% variance. So I think just working with confections, it's been difficult and it's gotten easier over the years with different emulsifiers that have come out and different things that have been more helpful to us in our kitchens. So I think just knowing your role and knowing your market is number one. And then also, you know, R&D is the biggest thing, you know, because again, you don't want to make a huge batch with a bunch of oil and it fails or it doesn't work out for you because let's say the oil burned off and what you thought it was going to be, you know, this milligrams, it's now actually this milligrams because you cooked it too hot. There's so many things. So definitely do your research.
So I would say, and of course I'm not pumping anybody here or anything, but either know what you're doing and get it right, or pay a consultant to help you develop your recipes so you don't screw it up.
Yes, absolutely. And I wish, you know, back in the day, like when I started doing this, nobody would, as soon as I would say cannabis, they wouldn't speak to me, you know? So it's changed a lot over the years. So I think now that there are consultants available, take advantage.
For sure. Let's step into the next area. In reference to people's concerns, particularly around Halloween and this type of product, getting in the hands of children, what can the industry do to counteract these rare but overreported scares against the legal status quo that many people want to believe is true?
Yes. So I would love to. I'm so happy you asked this question because this is a big topic that comes up a lot. So I'll tell you right now, if you see anything that looks similar to a candy or a chip or any product that's in the store, it is a black market off the street product. Because I can guarantee you somebody who's paying for licensing, paying for attorneys, paying for all this stuff that we have to go through to run our business, that we're not using somebody else's designs and Skittles and things like that. So a lot of it is a warning that they put out. And I've seen that happen where, like, you know, somebody gets pulled over and, you know, they get raided. And then all of a sudden the candy that they pictured in the raid is like on this news article, like this wasn't Halloween candy, or be careful and don't find this in your Halloween candy, right? Because it looks like everything else. I can promise you, if you go to a legal licensed provisioning center, you will never see anything like that. They're all child resistant. Every single edible has to be in a child resistant package. They're not clear. You can't see inside. So we as producers and the state, and I speak for the whole industry, we do whatever we can do to make sure we're following rules when it comes to children.
It's your right.
And exactly. And while we know nobody's really ever overdosed from cannabis, I still don't want to hear a child ate my candy. So what do we, you know, in Michigan, you can't have cartoons. You can't have anything too bright on your packaging. You can't have people on your, like, they make it so strict that I don't think if a kid saw my package, my real deal package that's from a store, is going to be like, oh, I'm going to eat that, because there's no, like, it doesn't look like that, right?
Yeah, there's no hook for the kid. Yeah.
Right. So I think it can potentially be a scare tactic or just a simple warning, because yes, they do find stuff like that out on the street. And, but those are not legit products, because you can't tell me if you see Skittles edibles, like, they're going to go after whoever's doing that. And I've seen it happen, of course. Yep. So I would say be safe. The one thing I would stress the most that I've seen happen a lot is, like, teenagers who will take it to school. That's the biggest one I would say, you know, talk to your kids. Definitely let your teenagers know, like, even though you could be doing something to have fun or whatever, right? Not everybody can handle what you can handle. And it's not fair for you to put other teenagers at risk just to have a good time. So that's my opinion on it. And I can speak for the whole industry when I say that's not the intention. We do everything we can to make sure that we have a product that does not appeal to any child, and it's in a child-proof, child-resistant packaging. It makes it very complicated. I can't even open some of the packages. They're milli-resistant too.
Oh, nice. So you're saying that a lot of these regulations are state mandated for your industry. Are all other states on the same plane, or is everything literally different, whether it's California or New York or wherever?
For the most part, I would say every single state is just about the same on that. Now, I don't know, one state might allow you to have the word cookie on there, but like when you come to Michigan, you can't use the word cookie. You can't use candy. There are a lot of similarities. If you were telling me, hey, I'm going to go start a business in Louisiana, and what are like the base things that I need to know about edible packaging, I could give you a list of 10 things. And then you're still going to have to go look in the laws and see, because every state has their own symbol. They have their own disclaimers they want you to put on there, you know, so it just depends. But for the majority of it, a lot of them will tell you no bright colors, no cartoons. You can't make it look like anything that's on the shelf at a grocery store.
So it's like basically what you're packaging is what looks like cigarettes at duty-free in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or gummy vitamins, or, you know, anything that you don't want. Yeah. That you don't want kids to have.
Yep. Do you know if any global changes affected people's decisions or perceptions?
Oh yeah. I mean, seeing in like Thailand, they're legalizing it over there. It's definitely bringing a different, or taking that stigma away, I should say, from cannabis, which I'm so happy about, because it really does help a lot of people. Just beside that, you know, you can have a good time. It really, I've seen over the years, just amazing, amazing progress from people just using cannabis. So I'm happy to see where it's going. I'm so happy the world is following along with it, and rooting that one day the whole world is just going to be a big smoke cloud. No.
Yikes. Do you notice a marked difference between THC customers and their uses/applications compared to CBD customers?
Oh, absolutely. CBD has no psychoactive effects. So typically from the medical market, the medical cannabis market, you'll see a lot of people that want a mixture of CBD and THC. CBD actually, if you get too high, right, off of THC products, CBD would actually bring you back down.
It like so helps moderate the experience.
Exactly. So if you take a product that has a combination of the both, you're able to take a higher dose of THC, let's say for pain management, and then you counteract it with CBD, and now you can take a little bit more, but you don't get as high, right? So there definitely is a difference. And I noticed with CBD customers too, they do like the smaller doses. But for me, for example, like I'm an experienced cannabis connoisseur. I use CBD topically. I enjoy it topically more than I do ingesting it. And I do like to smoke it as well. So I think it's just on the experience of the user.
I got one more I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
Would you care to elaborate on any experiences while traveling the country? I noticed from your bio again that you kind of traveled from east to west, north to south.
Yeah, so I worked in California. I've worked in Arizona. I've had some experience in Nevada as well. And then I came back around to Michigan. And I just, you know, noticed every market is absolutely different. And again, like, I can only stress the importance of studying the market that you want to be in and knowing what you're dealing with as far as licensing, laws, regulations, because it is different everywhere. What you think will work might not work. You know, for example, in California, they have a lot less stricter testing guidelines. So your formula for growing, I know I'm just throwing an example, but let's say it works in California and then you want to bring your model to Michigan and use it in Michigan, you might not pass testing if you're using certain nutrients that'll make you fail. So I would definitely take the time and study each location because it's very costly if you make a mistake.
So as we wrap this up, anything you want to plug, plug away.
Honestly, I think we talked about everything.
You got a website?
So my website is mudiracbd.com. Our website is down right now for the edibles, but we're rebranding right now. But you can find us on Instagram, you know, Millie Montana, HBIC is my page. So you can keep in touch with our new products and new launches that we do. So yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an experience, an enjoyable one.
Yes, and, thank you so much.
I'd like to keep in touch and see where you end up.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you so much to you guys for having me.
Thanks again.